This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love. And we're here to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I want to say we're going places all summer.
Yeah, we are.
We are going to be busy, busy. You and I are going to the Ring and Spa multiple times. But if you haven't seen already our Utah adventure, which is some of the best roads in Utah, registration for that went up this weekend. I actually am not sure by the time you hear this podcast if there's any space left. There was a little bit left when we recorded. That's why we post about it on Instagram and everywhere else with a really cool highlight reel. So that did exist. If it didn't exist, I'm sorry. If it's not available anymore, I'm sorry. Yes. There will be a trip later in the year where we're going to do Jackson Hole up to Cody, Wyoming, some of our favorite roads up in that area. That is happening later. That is not open for registration yet. But because of massive demand, Hooked on Driving is hosting yet another trip to the Ring and Spa.
That is in October. That is the 13th of October through the 17th of October. You can go to hookedondriving.com right now. It should be the very first thing you see on the carousel right there to register your interest, and then you will be sent an email with a registration link. That is 2 days on Spa-Francorchamps and 1 day on the Nürburgring, so it's a little bit less than our April-May trip, so it's a little bit less expensive, but it's still two glorious days, and the weather could be brilliant.
It probably will be.
We just never know.
Pretty good, yeah.
We've had great October days, and they're running at the Ring until November even.
Yeah,
even though
for
when
sure.
It starts to get crispy and cold.
You're more likely to get snowed on the Ring in May than you are in October. That's what's crazy.
Exactly right. So the first one is everydaydriver.com. Go to the Adventures tab for the Utah adventure. The second URL is hookedondriving.com for the October Nürburgring and Spa-Francorchamps trips. They are now available. I saw that Honda and Nissan are joining forces from a Financial Times article by Kana Inagaki in Tokyo and Peter Campbell in London. Honda and Nissan are teaming up to develop EVs just days after VW is saying it's collaborating with Renault. Nissan and Renault already have a collaboration, don't they?
Yeah, well, and Honda already has a collaboration with GM.
I don't get it.
Oh, and Honda, I think, also has a collaboration with Sony, also worried about EVs. Everybody's in bed with everybody, especially Honda.
One big world car company.
Well, but honestly, this starts to speak to one of the things you and I have talked about, though. This is the potential issue with EVs, is that everybody is going to run back to the same core elements, and it's going to wipe away any brand identity.
If everybody
is borrowing everybody else's stuff, that also shows, as far as I'm concerned, how the tech that runs an EV doesn't naturally have personality. It doesn't have uniqueness. We just need it to work. It need to have battery over here, engine over here. We need to have software. That needs to work. There's not a, well, this is the special way we do it. Who cares?
Couldn't Nissan team up with Renault? They're already teamed up with Renault.
Yeah, Nissan.
They could just team up with the company they're already teamed up with.
Well, and Honda's teamed up with GM, which means, is Nissan now going to be able to team up with GM?
Sorry.
You know, is Sony going to work with Renault? I mean, what's happening here?
Look,
one big pool.
You're absolutely right about personality, because I was worried about Mercedes engines inside Aston Martins. What about that is really British now? What truly
sure,
is it?
Yeah.
I guess it's just style.
There's a Toyota engine in the Emira.
BMWs, the Supra.
Yes, exactly.
So what about that is either Toyota or BMW on the Z4 side of things?
That's a good point, yeah.
I worry about just that dilution causing problems in internal combustion engines. But the good news is you select cylinders, you've got a different engine and weight placement, and they all drive differently.
Yeah.
Even though I think it's a brilliant idea for Aston to use Mercedes engines. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, that makes all kinds of
Pagani
sense.
Pagani does it. Others have done it, yeah.
So now it's just Aston sound. It's just Aston way of tubing the exhaust out of the back of the car, so it's an Aston sound with a Mercedes engine.
It's been Lawrence Strolled.
I guess so. But even those are still kind of on the cusp. Are they truly a Toyota? Are they truly an Aston? Is it truly a BMW? Well, mostly, for the most part, I guess, but beyond that, it's semantics, is it not? I mean, we love digging for the Fuji Heavy Industry labels on Saab products and Toyota products and Subaru products, and it's just dilution. And, you know, I get it, and we applaud special projects that create these cars.
Yes, for sure, for
sure. Because all of the ones that I mentioned are sports cars.
Yes, and
we're, none of these others are sports cars or fun driving cars.
Very good point. You and I, at the core, I actually might even be further down the road than you are on this, but I know you're with me, and that is, I don't care what the combustion is. I don't care how you moved me forward. I really don't.
Yeah.
Number of cylinders, turbo or not, EV or not, I really don't care. I want it to be fun and engaging. I want it to feel like this is not like everything else.
Yes.
And so, you know what, as far as where the powertrain comes, granted, I'm the Lotus guy and I drive a Toyota engine in my Lotus. I get it. But the reality is,
it's still Lotus to me, although you could argue like, well, what about it as Lotus?
Well,
styling and chassis and handling?
You were just talking about Mercedes drivetrains. The new Emira has got the Toyota Camry motor with a supercharger and the little crazy turbo from the CLA. These are the two motors. So so you've got a Toyota engine version or a Mercedes engine version.
Although in the case of Lotus specifically, that does make it inherently Lotus because it's not powered by Lotus.
Yes. But ultimately, I just want this stuff to be good. The concern I have with all of this, everybody's in bed with everybody, is it's all going to just drive the same.
That's my worry too. Springtime is here, and good news, everyone. Griot's Garage is running the first of three 20% off liquid car care promotions for 2024. The first one is coming in a couple days, and you can use the code LIQUID20 from March 21st to the 26th, 2024. Here's some ideas to use that code on. Ceramic liquid wax is now available. It's the most durable liquid wax Griot's has created to date. Maximize gloss, color, and depth while creating extremely repellent self-cleaning protection. It's great for use by hand or with a random orbital. Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer renews faded trim. It's good for tires too and repels water, chemicals, dirt, and UV rays for weeks. Don't forget Foaming Glass Cleaner. That's new too, which is a professional strength formula for fast, streak-free cleaning. The foam improves clinging and dwell time. It's ideal for tinted windows, mirrors, and glass inside and out. Finally, there's pre-measured car wash pods, so you get the right amount of soap when you use a hose and bucket. It works with foaming cannons and foaming sprayers, too. Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made in the USA. So when you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use that code LIQUID20 to save 20% off all liquid car care from March 21 to 26, 2024. That's G-R-I-O-T-S. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We're back with more of our best of series. Again, this is going on for the next few weeks. This will be our topic Tuesday until we get all the way through the alphabet of cars. We've got another 10 today. This is, what is it, Chrysler through Hyundai.
Yes, it's another 10, and we've got 50 on the list, and it primarily encompasses North America. We've left off a lot of the super-duper hypercar kind of stuff because you could easily say, well, everything they make is great. Koenigsegg, there isn't a Koenigsegg model that I don't want.
This is what they make. This is what it does. You can't afford it. Moving on, yes.
Let's jump into Chrysler. And I noticed on the website, like I've talked about before, this new best of series is giving me every reason to go to the website for these manufacturers. And I found the Chrysler 300 from 2023 is still on the website. Hey, Stellantis, did you forget about the website? Actually, did you forget about Chrysler? You don't want me to fill out the survey that just popped up on the website. You do not want to ask for that from me. No. I will only say the Halcyon concept is what interests me.
Okay.
However, this is going to be built on the Charger Daytona EV platform, which is actually the Stellantis STLA, the large platform, like the Alfa Giulia and like more forthcoming things from Maserati and Dodge and other Chryslers. My biggest question, though, is to you, the listening audience, is why does the Chrysler name need to stick around? But the follow-up question is, what brand would Stellantis use out of their 14 brands to market a minivan if they didn't have Chrysler?
You're hitting the nail right on the head. I mean, Chrysler is the Pacifica.
Lancia, nope. DS, nope. Peugeot, Opel, nope. Maserati, no, I don't want a minivan from Maserati, no.
I mean, it...
Jeep minivan, no thank you.
Chrysler Dodge pioneered the modern minivan.
Yes.
Okay? And it is at its absolute pinnacle right now. In the Pacifica, if you want a luxury minivan experience in the U.S., Chrysler Pacifica is the top of the list. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the best for everything, but they do it very specifically and they do it very well their way.
I can't imagine Chrysler ever introducing another model that is a car or anything else except for a minivan from here until eternity.
Chrysler just, makes the Pacifica. There you go. Done.
That's just it.
Yeah, fair.
Chrysler equals minivan. When I say Chrysler, oh, are you talking about minivans? And I will say yes. That's all that's they should ever build. Because they were the pioneers in 1984. It was really the Plymouth Voyager and the Dodge Caravan. But it should be now Chrysler. And they should make the minivan to outdo all other minivans.
Agreed.
The best minivan that ever minivanned.
Yes, agreed.
Is what Chrysler should do. And this is their opportunity to do it. But the 2023 300 is still on the website. It's sort of like, did you guys forget about this little corner of the internet?
It's a fantastic way to buy a 20-year-old Mercedes. If you really like to buy a 20-year-old Mercedes new on the lot right now, here's how you do it. You buy the 300. And I'm actually throwing stones, but the reality is the 300 has been around longer than it should have. But the truth is, when it first came out, it was a big deal. And it's kind of alone in the market.
05.
It's kind of alone in the market because it is the more luxurious version of the Charger. Which it's hard to get that otherwise because the Charger, we're getting there in a minute. The Charger is not known to be luxurious. It's many other things, but not luxurious. So the 300's kind of had its place in the market there, but I'm really struggling to figure out when the last time it was I actually saw a new 300 on the road. It's been a long time. But the Chrysler Pacifica minivan, they do it well.
They should talk to the web designers because that little box that always pops up, hey, fill out a survey. Tell us what you think. You do not want me to fill that out right now. Take that down. Figure out your new lineup. Take down the 300, then I'll fill it out. Maybe. You're lucky.
We're moving on to Dodge. And you know, Dodge, I feel like, is the automotive definition of one word. Uncouth. It's rough around the edges. It's a bit of everything Dodge. Keep in mind, you were just talking about it. Dodge was a pioneer of the original minivan, but there's no hint of minivan around Dodge anymore.
No.
Okay. Dodge is uncouth.
I mean, we'd welcome that.
We would have welcomed
a Dodge Hellcat something minivan.
Well, sure, but they're the Dodge Brawler. There's a car they don't have to go behind the name. They're a brawler.
The Dodge Irreverent.
They're a bar brawler. They're uncouth. Yeah. They may not have showered recently. It doesn't mean they're not the life of the party. Okay, but they are uncouth. And I want to jump right in here and say that a real standout from Dodge is the Charger in Hellcat form. No one else makes that.
Agreed.
Because even when Mercedes does the AMG, which is really kind of the Dodge Hellcat world of Germany, even when they do that, it doesn't have the raw, I'm ready to fight you demeanor that the Charger Hellcat has. Big, and I mean big, four seats. The four largest adults you know will all be comfortable in the Charger.
Going really fast.
Yes, and then they can go light speed with that crazy supercharger whine. That car is a victory. I'm very curious, we've mentioned it a lot, about the new Daytona EV and then the new Charger without the EV. Very curious about that, but the current Charger is a thing.
It is. I love Hellcat anything. The Durango was pretty cool, even though it was $93,000. It was still pretty cool. That prior Charger and Challenger, and then, of course, the new one. I'm just not in love with the styling. I hope that it's good, and I hope that it drives well. But as I mentioned before, it is going to be on Stellantis's.
The Stellantarians?
The Stella's STLA large platform. Produced and sold globally with 8 vehicle launches across 5 brands from 2024 to 2026. Dodge and Jeep, according to Stellantis press release here, will lead launches followed by Alfa Romeo, Chrysler, and Maserati. What from Chrysler? Are they going to do a 300 on the large platform? Because if they are, did you not hear our rant on Chrysler already? It's one of 4 global platforms for Stellantis for their 2030 strategic plan. So it's available in 400 volt, 800 volt BEV architecture. But the biggest thing is it's designed to handle lots of power.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what kind of power, like you said, could be a small nuclear power plant. We're fine with that.
The Dodge Nuke.
Hella Nuke.
The Hella Nuke. I like it. Oh, that's very good stuff. The Hella Nuke is excellent. I really want one of those right now. I have to call out the Challenger.
Those would sell like hotcakes, would they not? Yeah,
talk about hotcakes. It's nuclear, man. Be careful.
At the end Hella of Nuke. Your top speed drag run, it might melt. But nevertheless, you set the quickest time.
You did.
Good
you
news.
Did for sure. I do want to say that the Challenger, I'm kind of sad to see it go because it was the last real muscle car left.
Yeah.
Big, uncouth.
I mean, the ICE version is coming back.
You could buy it in crazy colors. The Durango, every time I drove a Durango, I was like, this is better than it should be. It's an old platform.
Yeah.
It's had every engine variant. It really doesn't have the space that it should. But anytime we drove one with a halfway decent engine, I was pleasantly surprised by the Durango. I have to be honest, I would buy lots of other things prior. But anytime I drive one, I'm like, you know, this isn't bad.
Moving on to Fiat, Currently, the only two Fiats for sale in the United States are the 500X and the 500E.
Mm-hmm. I went back a bit here.
You did?
I did.
The Fiat Italy site has the Baby Mouse, Topolino, the 600, the Panda, the Guy, the E-Doblo, and the E-Ulysses. Of course, that is the van. But I will say the two that are standouts for me are the 500 Abarth and the 124 Spider Abarth. Mm. I'm not including the 500X on my list. Just because it's on the website doesn't mean we think it's good.
I can't go 500X. I just can't. I can't convince anyone to get that car.
You don't even have to explain your reasons.
Well, here, I will also say
we
this.
We get it.
On top of all the reasons I wouldn't recommend you get it, I feel like the only time I ever saw one was the one in that like Caucasian flesh color. And I was like, who painted a car that color?
That was
are you
not
kidding?
It's
terrible.
Not good. Yes.
So yeah, the 500 Abarth, more personality than almost any other hot hatch made. I'm not saying it's the best driving, but as far as like I'm getting a laugh out of driving my hot hatch, the 500 Abarth was way up there. The 124, I have to say it, it's fine, but you should have bought an Indy Miata. You just should have bought an Indy Miata.
Is that on the Monroney?
I understand.
You should have bought a Miata.
You may prefer a couple of things. You may prefer the styling of the 124. I personally don't, but who cares? So you may prefer the styling of the 124, or you may be buying used because the 124s are like the Subaru. They don't hold their value. Nobody thinks of them. So you can get a cheaper, if you will, Indy Miata by buying the 124. I said it in our recent 124 versus MC20 not comparison that the best stuff about that car is the Mazda stuff. So I want you to just get
the
an
Mazda parts.
An Indy 2 Miata, right, which is actually more powerful than the 124. But I will also say there is one other standout here, and that is it's currently on the website. It's coming, apparently. The 500E.
I mean, they've got the old E.
I'm going to put it as a standout because shape, design, what it gives you, this is exactly what an electric car should be.
Sure. Well, it's small.
It's a small little electric city commuter. It gets 149 miles worth of range, which if you're using it in the city should be plenty. It charges off of a normal household plug. This is an electric car victory. Everything about it is like, yes, make that.
Sure.
The problem is it also points out the big problem with electric cars right now. It's $32,000, which is a lot
for
what you're getting. And this brings us back to something we were mentioning earlier that right up front, and that is, you know, everybody in bed with everybody over EVs, everybody's running scared of BYD, who at some point will be in the U.S. They're trying to pull machinations of building them in Mexico so they can import them because they can't import them directly from China.
Right.
And they're making them cheaper than everybody. Here's the 500E. Everything an electric car should be, but everything an electric car should be at 15 to 20 grand, and it's 32, which hurts.
That's a lot. Speaking of EVs, my question to the audience is, will Fisker be around in 6 months?
Oh, they are restructuring currently. Restructuring to avoid bankruptcy. If you just bought a Fisker this week, that was bad news.
Their naming convention is odd. I'm not going to even say creative. It's just odd. They have four vehicles on sale currently. There's
four vehicles
one.
On the website.
On the website, you're right.
The Ocean
That's
you can
different.
Buy. The others are coming soon from a company that is currently restructuring.
I misspoke. Okay, so there's the Ocean, and I did see one in Salt Lake City. I think it was a test drive. There's the Pear.
Yes.
There is the Alaska.
The truck.
The cool video renderings would suggest some sort of cool truck off-roader thing. And then the Ronin, which would indicate some sort of high-performance vehicle, ideally a sports car, something like that. But I am submitting new vehicle names for consideration. The Fisker Lozenge, which would be the minivan. Right?
Oh, that's terrible. I like it, but it's terrible.
The Fisker Quiche, which would be the squishy five-seat SUV.
The Quiche. I thought that was the Pear. It's already pear-shaped.
It's the pear-shaped,
yeah, going on, yeah.
And whatever the new sporty model is would be the Fisker Warhammer. Do we not need a Warhammer?
Yeah, but that's a Dodge name, isn't it?
Maybe.
Dodge Warhammer, that's the right version.
Any medieval
I like it.
Throwing spear. I like it.
Yeah, okay.
Jousting broadsword or something
right,
that is designed to maim and kill is what I would suggest for Fisker's new sports car.
Henrik Fisker, this is his second company with his name on the badge.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second. The second time this
has
happened.
He did do all those restyling, the bespoke body style
where they
for the
took
Mercedes
Aston
SL.
Martins and Mercedes and did that. So that was the third time. I take it back.
So it's kind of the third.
It's third time unlucky. Oh my gosh. We drove the original Fisker Karma, which became just the Karma when he sold that company, and somehow they're still making those cars, which I do not understand how the balance sheet worked out and tax tax evasion worked.
It went pear-shaped?
It went pear-shaped. Then he decided to make the pear. Anyway, there's jokes all over the place. He has no problems designing interesting-looking cars. That is his gift.
True. The guy designed the BMW Z8.
He designed the Aston Martin Vantage that I love.
Yes.
He's a fantastic designer. The aesthetics on his cars are fascinating. I also thought it was interesting that the Alaska, which doesn't exist but is cool on the website, looks like the updated EV version of the Chevy Avalanche, where the back seat folds down and you get extra cargo space in your truck bed. And it also looks cool because it's a Henrik Fisker design. This is the third, to your point, third company now with his name on the badge. Who is continuing to back him if this third one actually goes into bankruptcy?
He's looking around. Everybody else is doing it. Honda, Nissan, Renault. VW's looking at Renault. Nissan's bored with Renault. They're looking at Honda. Honda doesn't want Nissan. They're looking at GM.
Totally. This Ocean 5-seater, I've seen, like you have, I've seen a few of them around. It is not getting well reviewed. We have not driven it, but it is not getting well reviewed. So it doesn't have to, it's not a standout.
Marcus Brownlee didn't have too many kind words for that thing.
And then it's being sold as the only thing out there right now by a company that is restructuring and possibly going into bankruptcy. I think that may be the death blow.
Just need a 5-seat SUV. Of course you got a silver Fisker Quiche. Of course. You squishy and uninteresting and flavorless. Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're very excited to announce a new partnership with Battery Tender. If you park your car for any length of time, you need it to start. The last thing you want to hear is the labored whine of a dead battery. That's why you need a Battery Tender battery charger to properly maintain the battery in your vehicle to give it long life and quick starts every time. We're already customers. We use Battery Tender battery chargers on all of our cars year-round and especially through the snowy winter months of Park City.
Since 1965, Deltran Battery Tender has been the leader in battery chargers. Their BTP microprocessor technology and quick connect convenience automatically maintains the batteries in all your vehicles, lead acid, AGM, or lithium. Keep all your batteries in top condition. Visit batterytender.com and find the right product for you, including battery chargers, jump starters, inverters, and more. Plus, as our listeners, you can use the code EVERYDAY to get 10% off your order at batterytender.com.
We got to move on to Ford here. I've got a long list for Ford.
I am going
to start out with a 7th generation Mustang, including all the variants of it, because they are very serious about racing with this thing. The GTD, the GT Daytona at the very top, that $300,000 crazy invention.
It is, yes.
Of course, the Dark Horse R and the GT3 and GT4 variants. They're racing with all of these. The styling is actually pretty impressive and looks really good. Okay. And the Mustang needs to continue as a Mustang. Now, it should be much lighter than it is.
Mm-hmm.
It should handle better. It should be lighter. Really, those are the two standout kinds of things.
I'd like some steering feel.
Steering feel would not be good.
Have a Samsung screen on the dash.
Agreed.
But these are my opinions.
Just make it lighter, and it would instantly
would
sort of handle a little bit better.
Yes, you're right. Uh-huh.
I've got the 6th gen GT350 on my list because that was spectacular and interesting and fun to drive.
A truly special Mustang. It's on my list as well. The GT350. I am not a Mustang guy traditionally. My dad owned one when I was growing up. I'm not a Mustang guy, but I do have to say that the GT350, any time I've ever driven it, track, road, doesn't matter whose it was, doesn't matter what package it had on, it was just like, that's a special car.
Look, I'm not mentioning the GT500. We have not driven it. Just adding more power does not seem to be the recipe for making it better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is, maybe I'm completely wrong, but I never saw a lot of enthusiasts buying the GT500. The GT350 is the sweet spot.
That one got definitely better reviews.
Still had 500 horsepower.
Yep.
And also the 5th gen Boss 302 from 2011 to 2013.
That was a really good version.
That's a really good car.
As was actually the GT350 when it kind of faded away because, of course, it flat plane crank, so it had engine issues. Big surprise.
Flat planed
itself. Could have asked anybody that had done that, but they went to the Mach 1, which was also really good. I like all of those Mustangs, I have to say, it better than the current one.
I do too. I'm liking that.
I understand.
I was so encouraged because they put so much effort into the seventh gen Mustang, stylistically speaking, power, the engines, the flavors. Nobody had ever heard of Dark Horse. What is Dark Horse? What does that mean? And then all these racing variants, kudos and bravo to Ford for doing this, but they need to be a lot lighter. I know the GT3 and the GT4 variants probably are, but we need that for the street. Like we, us buyers.
It's a huge car and it feels like it. That's the problem.
Let's say we make it like 80% the size that it is and it's much lighter with steering feel and same power and maybe a little bit less money. Let's all get Mustangs.
We're product planning over here. I like it. It's very good. I had to put the Ford F-150 on here. What Ford does, and Ford makes sure they're doing this. This is not happening by accident, folks. Every variant you could ever want of a pickup, Ford will sell you one.
That's true.
You need towing options. You need people options. You need luxury options. You need work options. You need, I don't care what your options are. We have your options.
Do they outdo the 911 as far as variants?
I wouldn't be surprised as far as ways you
I'm
could
not
spec
gonna
it.
Count, but sure.
Here's the thing.
We'll go with yes.
I don't think, now you can get on the Porsche site and you can see all of the variants listed. Ford doesn't quite do that. But depending upon the boxes you check.
They're not as proud.
This one, you know, can tow your house. And then this one will go faster. Okay. Think about the fact that the Raptor is an F-150.
Yeah.
Think about the fact that all of the fleet trucks you've seen that look beat down and barely run because they were bought so cheap in mass and are all white, those are F-150s. This is the range we're talking about. And so what's great is Ford can say, we have the most towing, because if you check the boxes right, they have the most towing. They also can have the most luxurious. It's a different truck. It's still the F-150 bones, but now you checked all these boxes and it's the most luxurious. They kill it on that.
Then there's the 250 and the 350.
Oh, man.
The 450, the 550. Now we're getting into earth roamer chassis.
It's terrifying.
The 650, the 750.
There is nothing to me funnier than being down a normal dirt road where an earth roamer is holding up traffic with a line of people. We saw this in Moab.
We did.
This big earth roamer was
just like
trundling down the road. Behind him is like a hatchback.
I know.
And some person in like probably the most well-traveled Subaru Outback ever.
I think it was like a Outback or a Sonata
and
something.
They're all just waiting on the earth roamer to get out of the way. Yeah.
That was a little bit embarrassing. But yes, the Raptor R, the Bronco Raptor, the Expedition holds a very soft spot in my heart.
I know it does.
As does the Maverick. I think the Maverick is a win for Ford. To bring the Ute back or just a small pickup truck and all the variants that it contains, I think that is a huge win for Ford.
I 100% agree with you. I think the Maverick is one of the most interesting Ford products in the last few years, alongside one of the other ones on my list, which is the Mach-E.
You think so?
The Mach-E is, here's the thing. We have a sea of five-seat CUVs that are EV. Five-seat EV CUVs.
The Fisker Quiche.
Yes, seriously. We have a sea of them. They all look roughly the same. They're all offered in that same boring silver. They all do roughly the same thing. And among that is the Mach-E. I'm not going to call it a Mustang because I don't think it is. But the Mach-E actually has styling that stands out, and it just works. It just works.
Okay.
I think it's very difficult in that marketplace to do anything that feels like the alternative, and we have a little bit of flavor. And the Mach-E accomplishes that. And the Maverick, in a world of we tried to make a cheap pickup, also has personality. I think those two show you where Ford is headed and are done very well. And another one on my list that shows you where Ford was, they made it till 2019. That's the Fiesta ST.
Oh, yeah.
Such a great car. Yeah. They used to make the Fiesta ST, and now they make the Maverick. And follow along with me. The Fiesta ST was not an expensive car. It was not a very nice car. But whenever I drove one, it was exactly what a cheap, possibly even like cheaply made, because the materials inside are not nice. It's an economy car, but a fun hot hatch, affordable hot hatch done right. That is the Fiesta ST, better than any other cheap hot hatch I've ever driven. Nailed it. Well, Ford stopped selling cars because apparently nobody wants to buy cars anymore, certainly not in this country. And they have replaced that with the Maverick, which is not the be best at anything truck, but it's sold in tons of variants. It's also done very cheaply, but it's also done very well. It's like that's what the Fiesta ST became. I can't believe I'm saying that. I would rather the Fiesta ST where Ford was, but the Maverick is an absolute home run.
In a world of cheap pickups,
yes,
comes one cheaper pickup, the Maverick. I don't know.
I have to mention the Explorer. It was on the front end of the world of making us a plague of SUVs. I was going to say
Firestone tire debacle, but we'll go with that.
There's a whole separate thing. I don't think it is like the top, but it is still a very well done unibody SUV available in lots of variants. So they do it well.
Yeah.
I struggle to be like, that's the one I'm going to go buy, but they do it well and they've done it forever.
Focus RS is on my list. I cannot ignore this. Mm-hmm. And what a superb car. There were things about it that weren't for everyone, but you know what? I like that it's not for everyone. The last one we drove had 103,000 miles on it, mm-hmm. and it felt new to me.
It felt like they just built it. I agree with you. I still have to say that the button on the end of the stalk that makes the suspension soft, that button doesn't go soft enough. But otherwise, it's actually very good.
And then finally, the Ford GT of all years.
All right.
Put the GT on the list. Moving on to GMC, we currently have a 2024 Sierra 1500 four-wheel drive crew cab AT4X with the AEV package.
Mm.
It's got the 3-liter inline six turbo diesel making 305 horsepower, 495 pound-feet of torque. And I think I've found a pickup truck that I really like.
Interesting.
It's huge. Uh-huh. I don't need it. I really like the diesel. It seems so flexible, makes loads of power. It's quiet. This is the pinnacle of modern diesels, and it's an inline six. That's perfect.
I see it. My struggle with GMC is they are essentially an alternative styling version of Chevy's truck lineup.
Yeah, but they're the better. They go in the better direction, in my opinion.
Oh, I think most of the time, the styling is more interesting. The other thing about GMCs is that you cannot get a GMC truck of any level as stripped out, if you will, or as base model as you can at Chevy. They start about halfway up the boxes you would check at Chevy, and then they go up there all the way to their Denalis. You can get a really nice, let's just put it this way, you can get the nicest Chevy pickup you can envision with a better suit on is why you go to GMC. I don't know that I'm going to say that in any case it is definitely the better vehicle, but it might be the preferred version of the Chevy truck.
Fair enough. And the preferred version of the Suburban is the Yukon and the Yukon XL. I mean, I would prefer that. Even though the Suburban fully loaded $70,000, the Yukon and Yukon XL are really expensive.
Yes, they are. The minute you check that Denali box, things get quite luxurious, and my gosh, that got expensive. Isn't this just an American truck? Yes.
Same thing with the Canyon Denali, and the Acadia made my list too. I think that's still an excellent example and a trendsetter in a world. Well, it's not cheap pickups anymore.
It's not cheap, and I think it's been outdone. But it's a solid version of the Chevy product.
Genesis, practically everything they build is on my list.
This was the rare website. We're talking about going on these websites we never go to. And I clicked on Show All Vehicles, and they had this grand, well-lit photo of all of them.
It's beautiful.
Backlit, and I was like, you know, technically, if you came to me with any of those, I'd be like, yeah, decent choice.
Yeah.
I've got some that are better than others.
Sure. I say practically everything. The G90 is a standout. You were looking for an executive sedan. That is a fantastic
The affordable buy. S-Class. It really impressed us when it was here.
It did. The G70, of course, we talk about that a lot. In the past, the prior generation was actually, I think, the cooler one, but this one is still good. I still really like it. The GV80 is on our list, but I like the GV80 Coupe. It's not quite out yet, but it takes the visual mass out of the rear of the vehicle. It probably makes it a lot less useful, but it looks better to my eye, and that's the reason people will buy it. And the GV70 is one of the best standouts in the five-seat SUV category. I think Genesis has the best concepts out of any car company on the planet right now.
Interesting.
It includes, go look at this website and go to concepts, the X Snow Speedium, the X Grand Berlinetta, the X Convertible, the Speedium X, and the Genesis X are all gorgeous, beautiful, pretty automobiles.
Mm.
Fantastic, Genesis. Yes.
I mostly agree with you. I will say that the GV80 is good. I just don't consider it a standout. I do think the GV60 is interesting. It's one of our all-time favorite EV CUVs. It also has the Eye of Sauron, so I kind of have to like it. But the GV60 is on my list. The GV70 is how you buy a Macan for less. That's a really, really good SUV. Get that one with the upper level engine. You'll like it. The G70 sedan makes you go 3 Series what? I would get that instead.
Series who?
I just don't care. And then, of course, the G90 is the affordable S-Class. And I will say, I mentioned this, we have a POV coming recently, and I cannot believe I said this on camera, and I'm going to say it now on the podcast. When we had the G90, the big affordable S-Class monster executive sedan thing, I made fun of the fact that on the center console is a button to bring the door to you. mm-hmm. because the door is massive and you're down in this really comfy seat and the door is way out there. And so you kind of have to use the button to get it to your hand.
I want to reach.
And I always laugh about, I don't need automatic doors. I can reach for myself. However, I was in the S class a week ago and I had the door open all the way.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind a button right now just to get it to my hand. And I'm a big guy. I still had to lean out and find the
door. But if there's going to be a button, let's go ahead and close the door.
I guess we'll do it the whole way. I will say that here's my one caveat with Genesis, and we have heard this many, many times. Right now, they are doing the thing that Lexus originally did, where it's like, wow, you're getting a lot for your money over here. They're good materials. They feel wonderful in all the versions we get, which, of course, are press cars. The problem is they're trying to attract a luxury buyer. And at this point, they are still struggling with being a luxury buyer coming into a Hyundai dealer, as far as training is concerned. We hear consistent, lingering horror stories of treatment and dealer issues. Okay, now I'm not taking away from the cars, but let's just acknowledge the elephant in the room here. From a dealer experience, Genesis can't compete yet. And I will say the thing that Lexus did from day one is Lexus revolutionized the dealer experience. So that when you walked in and bought a Lexus, like, what is this brand? Do I want to buy this brand? The dealer experience was so much better than you'd had anywhere else that you took the jump. Mm-hmm. Genesis is suffering a little bit from the opposite problem, where their cars are superb and we really like them. But when people are going back to the dealers, sometimes they're disappointed because they're coming in with luxury dealer expectations and they're not getting that necessarily. So hopefully that's something that Genesis can close the gap on.
Are we to the point yet where people are buying Kias and just saying they're good cars? Are we still in the time period
good for a Kia,
where it says it's a good car for a Kia?
No.
Have we moved past that yet, or are we still in there?
I'd love it if we could move on, but the problem is now they're just all KN cars, and so nobody knows what they are.
That's right. Moving on to Honda, at the very top of the list is the Civic Type R. I love this car. I also love the Civic Si, and you know what? I love the Civic Touring, the sedan that we had. There was a little bit of fun to be had. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of tire screech to go along with the fun, but still.
Those tires are happy to give up. Just ask them.
Man, the new 11th gen Civic is spectacular. Honda is back, in my opinion. That includes the new Accord, especially the hybrid. It is huge. And I think even though the styling is not the most standout, doesn't need to be. It's sort of like S-Class kind of styling for its place in the market, for its category. It just needs to be clean and classy, and it has lots of space, and it's compelling for the price, and it drives great, actually. The new CR-V is excellent. The old one is not excellent.
I think Honda's in a renaissance right now.
Absolutely,
when I look at their current lineup, I don't love everything in their lineup, but I can say this with confidence. Every car in their lineup is an improvement over the generation prior. A noticeable improvement.
A huge jump.
And that is hard for a company to do. Every one of them is improved. The HRV, which was minute the last time, flat out is underpowered in the current version, but it's still good.
It's decent, yeah.
It's very inexpensive. It is their base thing. And you know what? I feel like of the CUVs you and I have driven, the low-rent ones, it's the benchmark. Try to be better than the HRV for the price. Mm-hmm. It's very good. The thing that Honda does that I don't understand it. I don't know who they hired years ago. No one else can accomplish usable space like Honda. You get in any of their vehicles at any size, you're just like, this has room, and it has a place to put that, and it has a place to put this other thing out of my pocket, and oh, you just bought the 45th drink. I have a place for that too. They do space better than anybody. And so that plays through everything they have all the way up to your point. Every version of the current Civic is great with a shocking amount of space.
Yes.
And you get in the Honda Accord, not an executive class sedan, not even considered the big full-size sedan, and has more space than everything else in the market of its same size, and many of the full executive class sedans struggle to have as much space as a Honda Accord. How is this possible? What are they doing? There's like weird magic going on there where the inside space doesn't match the outside space. They are phenomenal at it. The Passport Pilot I struggle with because I don't understand why they both exist, but then I go, okay, over here we have Tahoe and Suburban.
Well, true. Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thinking, so I guess I have to give that to him. The Odyssey's always been a minivan contender. I kind of preferred the prior version, even though Honda does keep working really hard to make the Odyssey a contender. And then the Ridgeline, this is the pickup that people that need pickups actually need. Not buy. This is what they need. The average person who needs a pickup. Look, if you work at a construction site, I understand. You tow a monster rig, I get it. There are exceptions to what I'm saying. Yeah. But in general, the average person with home projects that needs a pickup needs a Ridgeline. Just buy a Ridgeline. That's what it does so well. I am very impressed with Honda's lineup and use of space. Astounds me.
When I went looking for the Hummer website, I didn't find it. That's because it's buried within the GMC website.
Under GMC, yes.
Are they embarrassed? Are they embarrassed to not have their own Hummer website? I've never considered the Hummer to be a GMC product, even though in the past there was a lot of GMC sharing. But still, mm-hmm. Hummer, shouldn't it have its own website? If we're the greatest thing mm-hmm. since anything, shouldn't they have their own website?
Maybe. That's probably just a sheer volume thing. I mean, we'll say when we were last in Los Angeles, we saw multiple of both the Hummer pickup and the Hummer SUV. I actually saw them driving around LA. There's one here. There's one of the pickups here. And I want this to be a home run. I want it to be. And every time I'm near one, I'm struck by the following: expensive, heavy, stupid, and at least it feels cheap. How on earth is this $100,000 vehicle?
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like 50 or 60 grand worth of quality, and you paid 100 grand.
At least.
It's not efficient. It uses an enormous amount of batteries. It's wildly heavy, like road-breaking heavy.
Yes.
In spite of the fact that this was a moonshot by GM, and I know they're going to take this technology and trickle it down elsewhere, I don't understand why this exists. I really don't. I wanted to like it. When I first heard what they were doing, I was like, that sounds amazing. That's a perfect thing to do with the Hummer. Now we're on the back end of it. I'm just going, why?
Yeah, it's really in keeping with the Hummer name. the entire ethos of what you knew Hummer to be hasn't changed.
I mean,
they're just EVs now.
They worked as military vehicles. Then they wound up on the street. We started asking why, and we're still there.
Our last car company for this round is Hyundai. Pretty much anything with the N badge. The Elantra N is very high on my list, but so is the Veloster N. And we mm-hmm. mourn the demise of the Veloster N because that is a spectacular car to drive.
It's a very good car, yeah.
I don't care if it's front-wheel drive.
I don't care. There's just three doors. Bring me a Veloster
exactly.
N.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Look, the new Sonata is decent. The Santa Cruz Turbo with the turbo motor is really good. Even the new stylistic change. Yeah, yeah. Every little style tweak that Hyundai's doing right now is great, except for the Kona. If you have not watched our Kona piece, the brand new Kona, it's on our test drive channel right now, and it's great for every category that it tries to accomplish, except for styling. That's the only thing that I don't like, stylistically speaking, about Hyundai products. Even the Palisade, it's quirky and different and unique, but the Palisade is great.
It's actually one of the better quasi-affordable luxury unibody SUVs. It's amazing how much style and luxury you get in a Palisade. It is the sister car, of course, the Kia Telluride, but it is really the more luxury version, and it's really excellent as a result. I agree with you. There are the three N cars. We had the outgoing Kona N, the Veloster N, which of course is also out, and the Elantra N. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a question from Ted Adam Green asking about our preference of those three. I'm going to say Veloster N is my preference.
Yeah.
I really, really like it. Agreed. I like the quirky styling. I like that. The Elantra N may be the ultimate parent car buy right now.
Mm.
Because the Civic Type R is even more hardcore and more expensive.
Yeah.
The Elantra N comes in either DCT or manual, whereas the Civic Type R doesn't.
Right, right.
You've got options. The back seats of the Elantra N are excellent, as they are in the Honda as well. I really think the Elantra N, and now that they've revised the styling so that the front end is a little less, once they've fixed that, which they've done, I actually really like the new front end.
Exactly.
I think that is a real, probably my favorite Hyundai product right now is the Elantra N. I wish they brought the i30 in here. That's the hatchback we needed and never
got. Agreed.
And I agree with you that the Palisade, this is what the Cybertruck could be. It's quirky enough to stand out, but it's not so strange that it feels like that I accidentally drive onto a movie set and what is that weird thing? The Cybertruck just, it blends with traffic enough while being standout quirky. And it's like the Ridgeline, it's the truck you need.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, and it gets expensive like this, but if you get the upper level trim, it drives really well. Which
it does.
Is a surprise.
It does. And we've got high hopes for the Ioniq 5N version of that. It's very expensive.
Do we need that? Does that need to exist?
Well, do we need NHRA drag racing? No,
no.
But it's awesome. It's amazing.
But at least
the tires
it's awesome.
Are square when you're going 300 miles an hour.
At least it's awesome. I take your point. All right, fair point.
So, you know, we've got high hopes for that, and they are very much positioning that as a track model. We have not driven mm-hmm. the regular Ioniq 5, and I've got interest in the Ioniq 6. Hyundai has Kones.
They do. Oh, yeah, yeah.
For
yeah, they just try stuff.
Producing
yeah.
the styling of the Ioniq 6 mm-hmm. next to the Ioniq 5, and they are not from the same family.
Not at all.
I think they were designed in separate design studios on the opposite sides of the globe.
That looks like it, yeah.
But nevertheless, here they are doing that, mm-hmm. and everything is successful. I even like that concept, that N74 concept that they did.
Yeah,
even though
that
we're
one looks really cool.
Hearing
yeah.
noises that they're not going to bring it back because they don't do retro, but that would freaking sell.
It did look great,
sell.
Though, didn't it? Yeah.
Looks so good. So everything except the Kona. Style.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Guys, we will be back next week with more of this. I got a couple of questions I want to cover real quick, but thank you guys for your interest in this podcast. If you are not involved already as a patron, you can go to patreon.com or get there through our website. Our patrons are involved in something called Discord, which is the fantastic community that exists way beyond you and I, Paul. People are setting up drives and selling cars, and I think getting married, all because of Discord. There's a lot of stuff yeah. going on there. It's really, really cool. So that is a fantastic community. Remember that we have these trips going on. We also have some Hooked on Driving events coming up. Not just the Ring and Spa trip and our, of course, Utah adventure on the Everyday Driver side, but some really good couple day track events are coming. There's actually the weekend of April, the 4th, 5th, 6th.
Mm-hmm.
That is a hot weekend for Hooked on Driving. There's a Laguna Seca event going on. There's a Sebring event going on. There's a New Jersey Motorsports Park event going on, all happening on the same time that weekend. You can go to the Hooked on Driving website and see a carousel of the upcoming stuff. Something is probably in your area, and we are working on more as well. I have a question I wanted to touch on briefly from Facebook. Eddie Murphy says, do we think it's better for a manufacturer to build cars with reachable limits or ones you can't find?
I like this question.
Eddie, I'm going to answer this question on both sides. I know it sounds like a cop-out, but here's my thought. I would much, much rather that a manufacturer was making a car with limits we as drivers can find. However, that's not how people buy stuff. People buy stuff for capability they will never use. And I will give you an example, and you're going to be shocked at my example.
SEMA is the trade show for that.
Yeah, but I'm going to give you an example. You're going to be shocked at my example, and Paul's going to have to help me not step in something and get this wrong.
Okay.
Watches.
Okay.
Why do people care the dive depth of their watch?
Okay.
I'll go one further. I bet you the watches with major dive depth, if the watch companies gave those away to people proving they could use them, it would have no effect on their bottom line. We want to say that my dive watch can go 1,000 feet and I wear it in the shower. That's
or the pool.
Seriously, the average person with a watch that could survive to 20 feet would never exceed their watch.
Yeah.
Ever.
Okay.
But we don't buy that watch. We don't buy that version.
You're hitting it. Yes.
This is the reality. We want the watch that can go to space. Are you going to space? Have you ever been to, do you
I'm
know
not
anyone
scheduled this month
personally who's going to space? This is how we buy stuff. And watches True. Are a great example. It's not that cars aren't supercars that do 200 miles an hour. Have you ever? Trucks that can pull your house off the foundation. Why? That's how people buy, even though I so wish they would make cars we could use all of it and be like, I am using everything this car can do, because I love that feeling.
A balance of both will still sell. But you're yeah. absolutely right. People want to buy those high-end expensive objects that can do blank, A, because mankind has invented a thing that can.
Pin writes upside down.
People want to be a part of that.
You're right. Fair.
Now, to be able to just market that and say, it still has to do it. To market and mm-hmm, say, mm-hmm. my watch can go 1,000 meters down, or the truck can do this, or the car can go this fast. It has to be able to do it mm-hmm. to correspond with the marketing. But when people hear that, then they want to be a part of that. And just knowing whether or not they will ever take advantage of that feature or that capability for that product, is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's not irrelevant. It just doesn't matter as much as being a part of that and making that your right. personal ethos, your own brand. And that's the kind of pinnacle objects and precision and performance that you demand out of your own life. That's what that product says about you. Whether or not you'll ever experience that really kind of doesn't matter.
Look at my new dive watch. But dude, you don't even swim.
Right.
That happens.
But you're sharing in the human achievement to manufacture and make something that can. And then when you read about usually the sponsored athlete that goes and does that, you go, I'm connected to that person because I have the same watch or the same car or the same truck or the same product in my life.
Yeah.
That is connected and that sells merchandise.
You're 110% right. I couldn't agree with you more. And we're all just bumbling around looking for our tribe.
Yes.
And I feel like many of us, and I have my own quirks, many of us, we find weird tribes. Tribes where it's just like, really? That's what you're linking to? That's the cornerstone of your personality? But anyway, unfortunately, the products sell for things we'll never do with most of them, and cars are an example.
Waleed Z on Facebook says, what are the chances of the new MR2 being on a shared platform with Porsche, giving us an affordable entry-level Porsche?
I so hope so, and I so doubt it.
100%. They have now a track record of partnering with another German manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
So the hope on one hand is high, but on the other hand, it's Porsche. Porsche is not really known for doing these kinds of collaborations. Yeah. They don't have really a history of doing it, nor are they known for it. And I don't know that they need Toyota to be able to do that, even though having a Porsche platform Toyota MR2, boy, would that sell for Toyota. I think more so than most enthusiast cars.
Yes.
And it would give Porsche the thing that I've wanted for a long time. Truly a stripped-down entry-level Porsche with the announcement of the 2025 911 Hybrid. There's more and more tech. It's going to get heavier, even though hopefully not too much more, but more technology put in the flagship car. The Cayman will do whatever the Cayman and Boxster are going to do, but they're not going anywhere. And then this new entry-level thing that if you want more of the Porsche style and Porsche flavor, go over here and pay a little bit more. But if you want the Toyota, you get the Porsche badge, you get the Porsche roots, and it's no slight on Porsche. It's not derogatory to that brand, nor is it to Toyota. Toyota has their own racing history that is very much to be admired.
You know what I'm thinking of right now? I would so love this, and so don't think it's going to happen, but I'd love to have this. The new Toyota MR2 hybrid starts at 35 grand and goes to 45 grand. You know, I'll even say all electric. Starts at 35 grand and goes to 45 grand. It was co-made with Porsche. And starting at 45 grand and going to 55 grand is the new Porsche EV914.
Ooh, that's interesting.
MR2, 914. Those can look similar, but be different. Toyota, Porsche, they could go all EV, stack the battery so it's got a mid-engine feel. Done.
And when you need a minivan, get the Fisker lozenge.
Perfect. Problem solved. We're solving problems
we
here.
We really are.
We are product planning today.
Guys, thank you so much for all your questions. We really appreciate it. Go to everydaydriver.com adventures tab for the Utah adventures. And of course, Hooked on Driving for a track day in a region near you. We're looking forward to next time. As always, cheers, everyone.